68 with a half hour in which you'll laugh with Flip Wilson, hear some late sports reports, and also find out what busy Hubert Humphrey does to relax from the campaign. I'm Ted Steele, about to monitor music into Limbo 68 with Ole Jose and the Golden Leaves. Comedian Flip Wilson, who's a church-going man.
Can't wait till Sunday. I go to church every Sunday. I have a very strong religious background. I go to church. I go, like, I'm in different cities. I go to different churches. Last week I went to a beautiful little church uptown. It was nice, though, and I charge $1 to get in. Nice. You pay that $1, they give you a sandwich. Something like that. And they have a little group there that plays. The group does a 40-minute set, then Rev comes on, does 20 minutes. Then, like, Rev opened the service by passing the plate. Plate shot around the room, came back, nothing in it. Rev said, y'all, there's nothing in the plate. Said, I said, if I didn't, I lost money coming down here. So I'm going to send the plate back out there again and give y'all a chance to clean this up. Plate shot around the room, came back, nothing again. Rev said, now, brothers and sisters, we can't make it like this. So now I'm sure that everybody here wants this church to progress. But if this church is going to progress, first, it's got a call. This church has got a call. And the congregation yelled, let it call, Rev! Let it call! Rev said that after this church has called, it's got to stand up and walk. And the members yelled, make it walk, Rev! Make it walk! Rev said that after this church has walked, it's got to run. This church has got to run! And the members yelled, make it run, Rev! Make it run! Rev said, for this church to run, it's going to take money. And the members yelled, let it grow, Rev! Let it grow!
Monitor on stage, Flip Wilson, fast, funny, and fresh. Alpert, who plays the trumpet for a living. 18 minutes after the hour, my friend, and you're on the Monitor Beacon. Now, Pat Hernan with scores and the day's top sports stories. Pat.
Thank you, Ted. Rookie pro Bob Murphy has increased his lead to 3 strokes at the 54-hole mark of the $250,000 Westchester, New York Golf Classic. Murphy, after his first tour victory, came in with a 68 for a 15-under par 201. Runner-up Julius Boros, the PGA champ, had a 69 for a 204. Tied at 205, Dan Sykes and Reeves McBee. At 206, Fred Marty. At 207, defending champ Jack Nicklaus. And Arnie Palmer charged in with a 66 for a 208. Meanwhile, at the Birmingham Country Club in Birmingham, Michigan, Joanne Gunderson-Carner won her 5th Women's National Amateur Golf Championship, beating Ann Quast-Welts 5-4 in their 36-hole windup. At Saratoga, a 15-1 long shot named Champion upset Forward Pass and won the Travers Stakes by 2 lengths. Funny Fellow was 3rd. Now on the Monitor baseball scoreboard, Detroit 10, Boston 9 on Bill Frien's 11th inning homer, Baltimore 8, Minnesota 2, Cleveland 6, Chicago 5. In the National League, San Francisco 6, Philadelphia 4, Juan Marichal won his 22nd. Houston 1, the New York Mets nothing on Jim Wynn's homer. Cincinnati 4, Chicago Cubs nothing, a 3-hitter for Tony Cloninger. Everything else tonight. In tennis, the United States beat Spain in doubles today and took a 2-1 lead in the Davis Cup interzone finals. Clark Grabner and Chuck Passerell turned back Manuel Santana and Juan Gisbert 11-13, 17-15, 7-5, and 6-2. The two concluding singles matches will be played tomorrow. The University of North Carolina confirmed today that it is being investigated by the NCAA, allegedly for overpayments to athletes and illegal tryouts for prospects. The Southern Conference has agreed to allow its football champion to act as the host team in the Tangerine Bowl this year and in 1969. And that's Monitor Sports. This is Pat Hernan reminding you that for more features and news from the world of sports, stay tuned to Monitor.
Okay, Pat, and you know something? I knew that Joanne could do that out in Michigan. I'm proud of her. Monitor 68, I'm your host, Ted Steele, and the Sandpipers now sing softly.
Cigarettes were considered so new that we used an average of only 2 packs per person a year. By 1930, That figure rose to 70, and scientists soon became suspicious of cigarettes as a possible health problem. In the 50s, research was going on, both in this country and abroad. By 1962, the average per capita consumption of cigarettes reached 200 packs a year. Something had to be done. One of the reasons for concern is the great increase in lung cancer. In the United States alone, lung cancer deaths have increased from 3,000 in 1930 to 50,000 in 1965. Facts are facts. You can't argue with a fact. You can't ignore it. Or can you? Write for the newest free booklet, Facts About Smoking and Health, U.S. Public Health Service, Washington, D.C., 20201.
When a man is vice president of the United States, the most difficult task that he faces seems to be to find a nice, quiet place to relax, and then to find the time to enjoy it. Add a full-fledged political campaign to the normally hectic pace, and you begin to appreciate the problem. Richard Valeriani of NBC News found a quiet place to relax with Vice President Hubert Humphrey and enjoyed it.
You ever get a chance, Mr. Vice President, to just go out to a movie or eat in a restaurant?
Sometimes, but it's difficult. When I'm home in Minnesota, I can do it much easier than I can in other places. In Washington, it's exceedingly difficult. Frankly, if I'm working late at the office and try to find a place to go out to eat, it takes a lot of arrangements, and I just prefer not to do it. You know, I do get a little weary of having this entourage. You can't go anyplace, but what there's a lot of people that are just following you around. I don't know what they're all doing, but they're following you around. You do become discouraged with that. I guess that's one of the inevitabilities.
Do you get tired of eating all the cream chicken and peas out on the campaign trail?
I don't do too much of that, frankly. If I have a luncheon in a meeting, I seldom eat the lunch at the meeting. I come in for coffee and dessert. I try to have a sandwich maybe before, a cup of soup before I come down to the meeting. I do not, however, like to come to a meeting and just be introduced. That is bad manners, and it never sets me up for a speech. I like to be there, to sense the people, to be close to them, to get the mood of the meeting. I'm always having an argument with my schedulers on this. You know, we have to have schedulers, too. I used to do it myself. But they want me to come right on in, and you just introduce like you're a part of the entertainment. I don't go for that. I don't really go for so much of that fol-de-rol either. And, sometimes I recall that some of our people would say, well, when you're introduced, there must be special kinds of music or something like that. That bothers me. I prefer come in a normal, dignified manner, sit down with other people, enjoy a pleasant table conversation, and then when I'm called upon to give my message, rather than to come on in like you're some sort of a special attraction.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice President. This is Richard Valeriani, NBC News for Monitor.
More of Vice President Humphrey's relaxed conversation with NBC's Richard Valeriani, in which they touch upon everything but politics, will be heard on Monitor tomorrow. Tropical Gas from Mesa Williams and Monitor Music. Monitors nationwide and in the southern San Joaquin Valley were heard on KGEE, Bakersfield, California. I'm your host, Ted Steele.
Stay with Monitor, the people's choice for the best in weekend entertainment on NBC Radio.
Redson's Hamburger Restaurants present The Little Philosopher.
As a connoisseur of fine hamburgers, I find Redson's Hamburgers to be truly above reproach. This has been a paid commercial advertisement.
Monitor Music, hang 'em high, Hugo Montenegro. You know, there are very few performers who can be identified immediately by everyone from their first name only. Frank, Judy, Tallulah, a few others. Well, here's Barbara, funny girl.
Funny. Did you hear that?
Funny girl.
inside story of one of the most popular swingers of our time, Tarzan. And also in this half hour, we'll have the inside story of one of the most controversial subjects of our time, medical transplants. Right now, it's Monitor Music by the Irish Rovers, the Biplane Evermore.
We out in London Airport and hangar number 4, a lonely little biplane left whose name was Evermore. As working days were over, no more would he sail. Upon his wings above the clouds, flying the Royal Mail.
Bye, 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 plane, once upon a sky plane. Bye, bye, hush, goodbye, lullaby plane.
All the mighty jet planes would look down their nose. They laugh and say, oh, I'm so glad that I'm not one of those. And Evermore would shake away the eardrops from his wings and dream of days when he again could do heroic things.
Bye, 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 plane, once upon a sky plane. Bye, bye, hush-a-bye, lullaby plane.
Then one day the fog and rain had closed the airport down. All the mighty jet planes were helpless on the ground. When a call came to the airport for a mercy flight, could be too late, they could not wait, someone must fly tonight. And he rolled a little biplane out to runway number 5. And though he looked so small and weak, he knew he could survive. And as he rose into the storm, the jets on their wings, and they hope someday like evermore to do heroic things.
Bye, 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 plane, once upon a sky plane. Bye, bye, hush, goodbye, lullaby plane.
A silly baby bundle, I have spun a tale for you. You must learn there's nothing in this world that you can't do. Do not be discouraged by circumstance or size. Remember evermore, set your sights up in the skies.
Bye, 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 plane, once upon a sky plane. Bye, bye, hush, goodbye, lullaby plane. Bye, 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 plane, once upon a sky plane.
That's their latest. I'm Ted Steele. And have you met this young lady?
Tell me, sir, how much is that beautiful javelin?
I'm afraid I can't tell you.
You're kidding. How do you expect to sell cars if you won't tell people the price?
Well, let me explain. Only the price of this specially equipped javelin is a secret. If you guess it, you can win a javelin free. It's all part of the American Motors Dealers Smart Buyers Convention, where you can now save a ton of money on any American Motors car.
I think I love you.
Licensed drivers 18 and over eligible. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Everyone who's ever read a Tarzan book or seen a Tarzan movie, and that means most of the people in all the countries of the world, will be interested in a discovery that was made this month. A wax cylinder recording on which Edgar Rice Burroughs dictated one of his Tarzan adventures. Through the cooperation of RCA Laboratories, the deteriorating cylinder has been saved, although the sound quality isn't what today's ears are used to. You're going to hear part of it now, and I want you to listen closely. It begins, paragraph, quote, "We better be moving," said the farmer. "We gotta kill some meat today."
Paragraph, quote, "We better be moving," said the farmer. "We gotta kill us some meat today." Paragraph, quote, "What do you suppose it was that gets?" Paragraph, quote, "What do I suppose what was that had to come?"
No wonder you're so prolific. He dictated his books faster than I could read them. Edgar Rice Burroughs not only wrote more than 100 books, he also co-authored 2 sons and a daughter. And we spoke by phone earlier today to that daughter, now Mrs. James Pierce, at her California home. The phone connection may sound a little like her father's old dictaphone, but you can't miss the pride in her voice when I asked her, only about the wax cylinder discovery. Not only about that, but also about 20 new tires and volumes which were found at the same time. The so-called lost volumes.
The ones I think in question were the ones that he was dictating about. I think those were put away during the war. My father, of course, at the time was in Honolulu and the war broke out. And those were put away, and of course, for the war, during the war years, they were not considered, or they weren't even remembered about. And then, of course, after he got back, he became ill. And after his death, some of those manuscripts were found in his safe.
Do you think there are any more undiscovered books in the warehouses of your company in Tarzana, California?
I found about 20 of them.
Did you?
Yes. I don't know exactly the names of them. I haven't seen them myself, but there are several manuscripts, and we have published a few of them.
You know, there's something that intrigues me about the recording, Mrs. Pierce. It was made in 1940, but in a picture made at that time, the machine looks, well, maybe like a turn-of-the-century model, maybe even Edison's original. Do you remember it?
Yes, I do. That was an Edifone.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe at the time it was one of the, it was not a brand new one, but it was a good machine, I think, and my father had good luck with it and success with it, so he kept on using it.
Is there any connection between that trait of your father's and the fact that so many books could have been lost for so long? There certainly was a reading public waiting for them.
No, the only thing I can think of is that he probably had a few rejections on them. He didn't have very many rejections, but I imagine a few, and he would put them away and think, well, I'll bring them out later, and of course he never did.
Mm-hmm.
And we found them years later. You know, Tarzan of the Apes was very hard for him to sell. I don't know if you know that or not.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, he had quite a few rejection slips on Tarzan of the Apes, strangely enough. And he had quite a little trouble with it, but of course, as you know, it went over beautifully.
Yes. I think we should really tell your credentials, Mrs. Pierce. In addition to being the daughter of the man who created Tarzan, you were also one of the actresses who played the part of Jane, were you not?
That's right. My husband and I did Tarzan of the Apes on radio back in 1932. That's a long time ago.
Your husband, James Pierce, was one of the early Tarzans.
Yes, he was the fourth Tarzan in motion pictures in 1927. And then in 1932, we made Tarzan of the Apes on radio. And we followed the book, I might add, to the letter.
There are many facts about your father that I find intriguing. He wrote all those books about Tarzan and Africa. And the fact is that he never saw Africa, I understand.
Never was in Africa, no, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he always wanted to go there. Of course, I think by research and reading, he knew about as much about Africa as anybody in the world did.
Mrs. Pierce, thank you so much for being with us on Monitor via phone.
Well, it's a great pleasure. I've enjoyed it very much.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Mrs. James Pierce, the daughter of the man who created Tarzan.
Woke up, it was Chelsea morning, and the first thing that I heard was a song outside my window, and the traffic wrote the word. It came ringing up like Christmas bells, and wrapping up like pipes and drums. Oh, won't you stay cool in the day, and worry till the night comes. Morning, and the first thing that I saw was the sun through yellow curtains and the rainbow on my wall. The red, green, and gold to welcome you, crimson crystal beads to beckon. Oh, won't you stay here in the day? Does the sun show every second? Waiting to blow away.
Elsie Morning. The singer's name is Jennifer. My name is Ted Steele, and you're on the Monitor Beacon. It's Monitor with the latest, and right now it's Frank with his latest.
Gotta have you near all the time, with your dreams wrapped in mine. Gotta be a part of your soul and of your heart all the time. Nothing that I do means a thing without you. I'm just half alive in my struggle.
That's life, and we're about to meet a man who is concerned about life, too, the lives of all of us. Now that medical transplants hold the promise of extended years, it's certainly a topic of wide discussion, but more and more people are refusing to respond to the one necessary action which will keep the idea alive. And Monitor's Peter Hackus found out why from an official at the American Trial Lawyers Association, Edward M. Swartz.
Mr. Swartz, what about legal immunity for doctors who use their best judgment and wisdom, but who lose, for example, a heart transplant patient?
This really is not a problem. Obviously, I'm not aware of any suits of this kind in the first instance, and a doctor, no matter what kind of situation he's involved in, whether he's taking out a splinter or whether he's involved with a difficult heart transplant procedure, he has to exercise reasonable skill based upon his own education and experience. This is not the kind of problem that goes to the core of the situation. Let me suggest another problem that's a very real one and one that needs immediate solution. That's the problem of educating the public to make bequests of this kind. The problem is one of supply. The demand is already there and it's growing every day. What we really need right now is to get people to accept the concept that really, after death, the best thing we all can do is to make provision for science to use our body and parts of our body so that others might be able to sustain life. and I think this is the kind of education that we all need. As an attorney in my office, very often I've made this suggestion. People that are in our office to draft wills, et cetera, and quite frankly, educated people can't accept this concept, and no one's talking about it. This, I feel, is the threshold problem.
Is this a simple process, a simple piece of paper? Do you have to specify, or should you specify, certain organs?
It's as simple as calling up your lawyer and asking for his advice and changing your will, or even writing a letter. And you know, the Uniform Act is a uniform act in this area. The will and the statement and the letter doesn't even have to comply to the rigid standards for making money requests, for example, and other standards. It's a very, very simple procedure.
I hereby, whatever it is, and it could vary in different states, they can make these pledges, they can make these bequests with the help of their attorney. In any event, we not only ought to do it, we ought to educate others to do it. And of course, I think ultimately, if the legislation in some states does not permit this, if there are enough people doing it, of course, it's going to result in enactment of enabling legislation. Now, it seems to me there's one other problem there, Mr. Swartz. Wills are sometimes opened 3 weeks after death or even longer. Is there some intermediate step that can be taken?
Yes, as I have suggested, and this is an interesting problem that you raise, as we have to have central registries whereby when someone makes a bequest of this kind, it goes into a central registry. And upon death, these registries are immediately notified so that the problem of matching can begin. For example, if someone passes on in Boston and someone has made a bequest of this kind and there's a little girl or an older man out in California that needs an anatomical part, how are we going to find out about this in time? And the only way we're going to be able to do that is by establishing central registries for the exchange and dissemination of this information.
Thank you very much, Mr. Edward Swartz of Boston, official of the American Trial Lawyers Association. This is Peter Hackus in Washington. Now back to Monitor in New York.
Music, I'm Falling Down, the Brothers Four. Here's a listening reminder. NBC News received the highest rating and critical acclaim for its coverage of the Republican convention. And beginning August 26th, NBC News will be in Chicago to report the Democratic convention clearly, quickly, and comprehensively. Shank, and there's got to be NBC News on the hour. I'm Ted Steele. I'll be back.
The wheel must take the station break. Don't turn your set off. Don't you make a mistake. Don't leave us behind. There's still lots more time. Good morning,
earth. Visual handicaps do not have to mean blighted lives. With vocational training and proper counseling, thousands of blind people achieve their job ambitions every year. How can this help be found? The State Commission for the Blind and Visually Handicapped can assist in acquiring skills and locating jobs. For more information, contact your local Agency for the Blind or the New York State Commission for the Blind and Visually Handicapped, 15 Park Row, New York City, 10038.
If your problem is keeping up with what's happening in and around New York, my advice is, following Dr. Joyce Brothers, join me, Lee Leonard, weekdays 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. right here on WNBC. The latest news, the newest people, and the best ideas, yours and mine, on The Lee Leonard Show, 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. on WNBC Radio.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York.